Okay. All right, so anything that you want to note or anything I miss you want to bring up and add, then feel free as we go. And I just wanted to give a little bit of background because I think, or a brief background, because I had, I think I had omitted something in a book that is very, very close to this one in terms of the time frame when we went through it initially. And I either intended to bring it out in the last Bible study or bring it out in the sermon regarding a lot of the comments, especially Steve's comment about some of the things that are happening in this book are actually stunning in terms of, oh, wow, this is like it's happening in the present day. And I agree with that, and I super agree with that, and you'll see that I do agree with that so very, very much, because that was where my emphasis is throughout this Bible study, is that I believe that we have reached a turning point. Now, I had a guest editorial in my World News and Prophecy Review from one of our ministers in England, and he made a very good point that when we look at what's happening in today's world, it's obvious that a prudent man sees the evil and begins to prepare. And so his message was, okay, maybe it might be good to prepare in a physical way to take some of the worry out when some of these things really begin to happen that are very, very difficult. So I thought it was an excellent message that he had, and it ties back into, you know, he also added, look, sometimes these things recede. It's like I've always said that prophecy is like the waves of the ocean. Sometimes you see a huge wave come in and you think, oh, wow, this is the time of the end. This is the fulfillment of this prophecy. And then what we have been used to is that that wave recedes back into the ocean and things return to normal. Now, I felt for over a year, maybe more than that, that things haven't returned to normal and maybe they never will return to normal. So my view is, in preparation, I'm thinking, okay, gas is like over $4 a gallon now, almost $5 a gallon in this town. It's $8, $9 in some places in the United States. What happens if there's no gas available? So that's where my mind is going now because, well, it's very, I don't want to jump ahead of myself, but if you'll turn to Micah chapter 5, I mentioned in verse 7, Micah 5 and verse 7, that this is a prophecy that covers the end time people of Israel, the remnant, the ones remaining at the last. A remnant can mean a lot of different things. It can mean a piece of a garment that's cut off and whatever. But in this case, it means the descendants of Jacob, Micah 5, 7. And so what does it describe, Micah 5, 7? It describes a very powerful group of people who are Jacob's descendants. Jacob was Israel, right? Jacob is mentioned in Genesis 49 as Joseph as well. So Jacob, Joseph, Ephraim, Manasseh, Israel, did I say that? Even just the mention of Ephraim as the leading tribe, anciently speaking, and, you know, the first time that the blessings of Abraham began to be experienced, Ephraim is first and foremost because they experienced the first fold blessings of Abraham's blessings, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, okay? So Micah is describing something that is also described in the book of Hosea. You have this people who have got God's blessings, and they have enjoyed God's blessings like all of us have for many, many decades. And it says that if they go through, they're the king of the jungle, right? Okay, they're the lion that goes through the jungle. And it says that all the way into verse 9, your hand shall be lifted up against your adversaries, and all your enemies cut off. Now, there is a certain political viewpoint that holds that there have been a number of wars that we have been involved in since Vietnam, including Vietnam, that we easily could have won. And the certain theory is that those things haven't been lost because of incompetence. You see, this is what I've always thought. You know, we didn't know what we were doing. We didn't. But what if there is a deliberate attempt to just keep a constant sense of war? Isn't that even more evil? I mean, there are a lot of people other than me that think this is the case. 20 years in Afghanistan, and why did we get into Afghanistan? Because we had Saudi Arabia bombers that, you know, Saudi Arabian individuals that took over planes and crashed them into buildings and the Pentagon and blah, blah, blah was. And so then we went to Afghanistan and Iraq because of Saudi Arabian dissidents and people that were whatever. I mean, when you begin to examine some of these things, it just doesn't make any sense at all. And then weapons of mass destruction that were never found, those that was used as a pretext for going into the Middle East and just perpetuating something. But a lot of people got rich off of all of that. A lot of people did. The wealthier in the last couple of years have gotten even wealthier. You know, the billionaires have increased their value of money during the time of the pandemic. So you begin to think, this isn't just because of accident. It's not because that God has intervened and he's beginning to punish. It's because of deliberate attempts. And that is what prophecy brings out. Deliberate attempts by the leaders. Now, the point that was well taken is that there's blood and killing and swearing and lying and everything in the land, and blood touches upon blood, etc., etc. That is the consequence of lack of leadership, lack of enforcement. And when there is respect from the top for law enforcement, there is a general acceptance of law and, you know, authority within the nation. And you see trends that happen with in our world of the United States. For those who are listening elsewhere, you have to, you know, apply it to your own particular country and nation. But it is a fact that crime is skyrocketing now for the first time in decades. I mean, in an exponential way. So the next verse, and okay, you're saying, when are you going to get into the book? Okay, I understand that book is important, but I feel this is very important too, because it gives us a clue as to what happens. And also, Hosea says basically the same thing, how sudden the fall can be from the height of power. It shall be in that day, verse 10, Micah 5, that I will cut off your horses from your midst, destroy your chariots, and I'll cut off the cities of your land. Now, how quickly can it happen? Very, very quickly. Now, we're not there quite yet. But look, we're fighting a proxy war with Russia right now. Okay, people can call President Putin evil. And yeah, he's kind of evil. But what about us? We are funding both sides of this war. We're funding Ukraine, but we're also funding Russia because of our reluctance to drill, to keep pipelines open and everything else. That is cost. That has sent the cost of fuel, natural gas, and oil skyrocketing like it has never before. And only a year ago, let me remind you, we had the cheapest price for gas that we have ever paid in the history of this nation. Oh, wait a minute, Mr. Buchanan, I paid 30 cents a gallon when I was a teenager. Well, yeah, so did I. But based on inflationary trends and based on the value of the dollar, last year, last January 2021, as a nation, we had the cheapest gas we have ever had. Now, back when you paid 25 or 30 cents a gallon, you were making, you know, $2.25 an hour. Okay, so it's kind of relative. But when you factor in the inflation, so look at what has happened now. Your lives have changed. My life has changed. This is going to cause, and there already was massive inflation with all of the money that they have printed. You know, it's basically worthless. It's going to collapse, and it may collapse very soon. But God says that all of the military power that we have, which is the greatest in the earth, everything that we have to defend ourselves is going to be cut off very, very quickly. I will cut off the cities of your land, and I'll cut off sorceries from your hand, and you shall have no soothsayers. Your carved images, I will also cut off your sacred pillars from your midst, and you shall no more worship the work of your hands. So it's coming. And that's the scripture I wanted to go to as a prelude for going into the book of Hosea. Now, remember, just a brief review on Hosea. This is a book that is mentioned. This is a book that is for the descendants of Jacob as well. just like Micah was. It mentions Israel 44 times. It mentions Jacob 3 times. It mentions Joseph 32 times. It mentions Ephraim, again, as the leading nation, the first one to begin to inherit the massive blessings around 1800, maybe a little bit before that, but about 2,520 years or 7 times after the fall of Israel in 721 and 718 B.C. Yeah, they disobeyed, and that's what this book is about. It's history. It's the history of people who went into captivity because they immediately began to set up the golden calf in Bethel and in Samaria, and they immediately began to adopt. Okay, that's something that's foreign to us. We don't understand that. But this book is for the descendants of all of these folks, which are basically the same. Israel, Jacob, Joseph, Ephraim, Samaria, and then Judah is also mentioned 6 times, and only a few places in history or in prophecy, and mainly in this book, are the tribes of Judah, Ephraim, Joseph, Jacob, all of those people, which we know are the same, are they mentioned concurrently falling? Do you realize that? They're mentioned a number of times here. I mentioned that is a key to understanding this particular book. And whether I tend to believe, well, I do believe. I don't tend to believe. No, that would be leave some wavering. But I believe God did tell Hosea to go find a wife of harlotry. I don't think it was metaphorical. It could have been, but maybe I'm wrong. But it doesn't really matter because the meaning is this is to show what our people have done to God. Unfaithfulness. Unfaithfulness. Now, if a people become unfaithful, they can't know it unless God reveals it to them. And Amos 3:7 says that he reveals his secrets to the prophets. And that's why it's so important to study these books and to read them. You know, look, pour your nose into it. You may not be able to understand every single historical nuance. And I could just fill the Bible study. I could fill one chapter every couple of weeks. We could go over one chapter with the historical incidents. That's not what I want to do in this Bible study series. I want to give you the overview so that you can dig into it yourself with the various helps that you have. And, you know, you'll get it. But the main thing is understanding it's a book for now, and I hope that we'll be able to see that as we see these things. Now, 30 years ago, when I first began to give a Bible study on this, on the minor prophets, which was the first time I'd done it 30, 40 years ago, and up in Rapid City or wherever through the areas, a lot of these things were not true. Some of them were kind of true in their infancy, but you would kind of be like putting a square prophetic peg into a round hole to say that it was happening right then and there. But I think that there's no doubt in my mind that we can see these things happening right now. So with that just as a background, let's go to chapter 4. And let's back up to where Paul had mentioned in chapter 3. Because there's this, you see this threefold aspect. In chapter 3 and verse 4, the children of Israel shall abide many days without king or prince, without sacrifice or sacred pillar, without ephod or teraphim. So there's three things mentioned here. There's coming a time when there's no autonomous rule. That's what the commentaries bring out. Now, we're used to being independent. We're a nation that's independent. God says there's coming a time when you're not going to be governing yourselves. You're not going to have, you may have a president. These are my words. You may have a president, but you're not ruled by that president. I think it's kind of, it's, maybe it's not obvious to everybody, but I think that we understand that what is happening is not an accidental thing. The decline, the very, very quick decline of our nation, it's not accidental. It's deliberate because, you know, sometimes we can say, oh, the dumb Democrats or the dumb Republicans. Nobody is this dumb. Nobody's this dumb. So it's contrived. It's purposeful. So if you don't have autonomous rule, if your nation is not calling its own shots, but if the strings are being pulled elsewhere, if your religious ceremonies don't have any real meaning or not really honoring God, and if there's no direct revelation from God to the people, that's what it means, the aspect of the ephod, the teraphim, those were the priestly garments. So, you know, we don't have those anyway in this society, but it's speaking about the vision that God gives. You can go back 40, 50 years, you go back to Eisenhower, you can go back to World War II in our nation, and you can definitely see people who had a relationship with God, who on the eve of D-Day prayed for God's success and GIs, and now it's different. We do trust in our own armaments to some degree, and Mr. Tannert brought out the major theme of chapter 4. There's no truth. This is verses 1 and 2. Here's the charge God brings. There's no truth or mercy or knowledge of God in the land. By swearing and lying and killing and stealing and committing adultery, and all those things are bad. I put the onus on the leadership first and foremost. A glimmer of hope may be that during this time of the pandemic, things were revealed about what is happening in our school system and public education that many parents were shocked at. So don't think you're the Lone Ranger, like I'm a church member and, you know, I know these things and all those bad people out there. No, 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 no. We have unchurched people who are out there who just haven't been given the same opportunity that you have. So be very careful about just applying this to every single person. Now, there's a lot of crime and there's a lot of viciousness, and I don't know if it's I don't know what the minority is, but it's a minority of people. I mean, I don't believe that Luke Bryan is right in his song, "Most People Are Good." You know, maybe a lot of people are good, and a lot of people have great intentions, but we're moving to this place where, you know, all you have to have is a minority of people who are executing crime and violence. And, you know, the other day I was walking out of Walmart, and I had a bag full of stuff, and I go out to Garden Center. I may have mentioned this before. I go out to Garden Center because it's a lot easier for me just to avoid all the people, and, you know, I can park in a space where I can easily walk to, boom, 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 and I always make them look at my bag. And there's an old gentleman there. He was sitting in a wheelchair, and he's the one that's checking. You know, they won't. He says, "They are robbing us blind here." I said, "Really?" He says, "Yeah." He says, "And we can't do anything because Walmart is so scared of a lawsuit." And so I respect that. And I, you know, most of the people that are checkout people, I mean, because I'm shopping there all the time, they know me. They just go on. I said, "No, check. I want you to check." Because at least I want them to know that there's one person that's not fleecing them. But they're walking out, and of course that shoots the price of all goods and services up. And so there's a fair amount of that. But go to verse 6 of chapter 4. "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge." You know, our churches used to teach the Bible. They're not teaching the Bible. They don't, you know, they're the feel-good. The people are the most popular preachers in our nation today are the Joel Osteens. And, you know, he's got a big smile and he talks great and it's just friendly and everything. But they never really tell people to do anything and, like, obey God. Now, I'm not down on Joel Osteen and his $50 million mansion or his two mansions and his boats and his airplanes and all that. I don't care. He can have that. That's great. He's got a good thing going. He's not a bad person, but people need to be told that, look, you need to repent. This is not feel good. This is not feel good time. "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I will also reject you from being priest to me." Leadership. Not that the people are the priesthood, but in a sense, that's what they were destined to become, right? A nation of kings and priests. That's what God intended for them from the time that he brought them out of Egypt, that they would be this. So there, he says, "I'll also forget your children." Let's see, verse 10. "They shall eat, but not have enough. They shall commit harlotry, but not increase, because they have ceased obeying the Lord." We worship in our nation today, oftentimes, We worship what we've accomplished. We worship our technology. We think about those things as being the things that will save us out of everything. And, you know, the problem is, and you go through verses 11 through 14, is that God is the provider of all wealth. Everything that mankind has developed, it's all been done by God. It's all been given by God. Now, jumping on to verse 15 of chapter 4, though you Israel play the harlot, let not Judah offend. You know, warning to Judah, don't you follow in the same pattern. And, you know, they were separated in their captivities by about 120 years. But do not go up to Gilgal, do not go up to Beth Haven, which were the worship centers for calf worship, anciently speaking. So it's a warning to Judah not to follow in the footsteps. And then verse 16, it says, Israel's stubborn, like a stubborn calf. Now, I'm not a farmer, so I don't pretend to know how calves can act, but they can be independent. And this is what God is saying about our nation. They're independent. And because of that, here is the mixed metaphor, you might say, by the prophet is, now the Lord will let them forage like a lamb in open country. Okay, when that happens, you've got one single lamb in an open field, open country, no protection, no shepherd around, the only one around, it's fair game from predators. And that is what I think we're going to see moving forward, unless that wave of the ocean kind of recedes a little bit and we have a change in direction. I really, after viewing the events of this week, I don't see that happening, but, you know, it always could. I'm not a prophet, as of course Hosea is. So we have to be on our toes. Ephraim is joined to idols. Let him alone. Their drink is rebellion. They commit harlotry continually. Her rulers dearly love dishonor. So again, Ephraim is symptomatic of all the tribes because they're the leading tribes. The leaders now. Okay, it's hard for me to give this Bible study in the present day without naming names. So all you have to do is look at the leaders of our combined nations of Israel. We're talking about the English-speaking peoples of the globe. Okay, where shall we begin? President Biden. By the way, Mr. Horchak, I do honor his office, we honor the king, but we would fail in our job in explaining what is happening in the world if we didn't isolate the cause of some of the problems. But where do you begin here? Where do you begin in this whole mess of what has happened? It's hard to take a country down that is as big as the United States. So I'm not going to even go further into the actions that have brought us down, but all you have to do is see the president at work among the world stage, and then you can realize that there is a reason that Iran, Northern Korea, Russia, and China, and the antagonists of the world, the jackals in terms of beasts of the world, why they are so emboldened. Because there is not a strong America now to defend. And, you know, I'm not blaming Mr. Biden. It's happening under his watch. But I'm not even saying he's the one that is formulating the policies. But from day one, all the executive orders, whatever, 20 of them, you know, eliminating pipelines but giving Russia pipelines, you know, protecting the borders of Ukraine but not protecting our borders. So, I mean, this is would be an endless list, but I'm not here to bash anybody. Trudeau of Canada has said openly that his favorite nation, the one that is the most admired by him, is communist China. He said that before he was elected, while he was running for election. Everybody, oh, this is great. Yeah, he loves China. Yeah, because he's so liberal and he's so wonderful. He's so positive about China. But his reasons were because in the Chinese system, in the communist system, you can turn things on a dime. You can tell people to do this or else you can just put them to death. Or you can put them into a camp of 3 million Uyghurs and force them into slave labor. So he said that's what he loves. Take a look at Scott Morrison in Australia, who's allowed, you know, this nation to be one of the most mandated nations, kept people locked up for months and months and months, even when they had very little problem with COVID in the origin, and forcing people to take vaccines that they didn't want to take. I mean, and I'm getting correspondence from people all over the world now, Australia, New Zealand, and take a look at the. It used to be in our nations we did not have communist leaders. But now we have people who openly embrace communism and socialism in democratic democracies and republics. And this is leading to the ruin of and a repudiation of the blessings of God. And when you think about it, communism, socialism, all these other isms are directly opposed to the free market style that God had actually established among Israel. All of them say, I get what I need from the state. Now, in fact, actually, you know, if you go back to some of the former communist nations, they've actually embraced more free market acceptance in many ways, which totally is contrary to the 20th century history in so many ways. But when you take a look and examine socialism and communism, it's all anti-God. And that has been embraced by every single leader now in all of the English-speaking countries. And that's who we're talking about now. That is where the problem is. It's a total rejection of God, not just by people saying, oh, I don't believe in God anymore, or, you know, I believe in, you know that we can just let people choose their own genders, and there's 50 different genders, and you can be whatever you want to be. No. All that stuff is bad. But the main thing is that at the beginning, you've got people that are rejecting God by accepting government as their savior. So when you read about all of these centers like Bethel, Gilgal, and the rest, and Samaria, then just substitute New York City, Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, Chicago, because that's what it means in the modern day, the age and influence of Seattle, the age of influence of our modern centers today. Now, back to verse 5. Hear this, O priests. So now we're back to the leaders. Take heed, O house of Israel. Give ear, O house of the king. So the priest, the house of Israel, the king, three groups again are mentioned, which is kind of a poetic thing done in the Hebrew. For yours is the judgment, because you have been a snare to Mizpah. You know, you're the trap. You're the ones that are causing the problems, and it's deliberate. That's why I say, yes. Chapter 5, yeah. Chapter 5 and verse 1. I'm sorry, I have this circled. Chapter 5 and verse 1. My bad. Thank you for raising your hand. I suppose I'll hear about this later. No, just kidding, I think. Verse 4 of chapter 5, they do not direct. Don't give her a microphone. They do not direct their deeds toward turning to their God, for the spirit of harlotry is in their midst. They do not know the Lord. The pride of Israel testifies to his face. Therefore, Israel and Ephraim stumble in their iniquity. So we're talking about all of the tribes now, all of the modern nations of Israel. Judah also stumbles with them. Again, another indication, another instance in which this did not happen in history. It's going to happen in the future. With their flocks and their herds, they go to seek the Lord, but they will not find him. He has withdrawn himself from them. Now, for this to happen, they have to be warned first. I think that we would all agree on that particular thing. So all of this is hinging, in my view, on them being warned and rejecting that warning. So we had mentioned, was I going to mention it here, or maybe I'll mention it somewhere else? Okay, probably elsewhere. But this is the real key. Now, how fast can it happen is the key. How fast can a nation go downhill? Pretty quickly. The indication, this is not, okay, an ironclad guarantee, but in the next few verses, we get an indication of how quickly could our great nations fall. And it says in verse 7 of chapter 5, they have dealt treacherously with the Lord. They have begotten pagan children. Now a new moon shall devour them and their heritage. So in the space of a month, it could happen very fast. So when you get the accumulation of problems, sins, and everything else, it can happen. I'm not saying it will happen in just a month's time, but let's just look at it this way. We have an incredible problem that the news media does not cover in this nation. And all of the nation, well, basically this nation more so than the United Kingdom, but both of us have huge problems in illegal immigration. Now, in London and much of the United Kingdom, it is Islamic in nature. In our country, it is from our southern border, and we don't even know how many people have come. They have been welcomed in. They come across the border, a lot of times in McAllen, Texas. They're loaded onto white, unmarked government planes. This is proven. You can figure this out. You can find this out. It was reported just the other day that in Sky Harbor Airport, they have over 400 illegal immigrants that pass through that airport alone every day. They're coming across in hordes, in millions. Probably in the last year, probably 10 million more, believe it or not. Now, you can absorb a lot of people throughout the country, but they're flowing all over the place. And they're putting them in former government institutions, in you know, some small towns, former prisons and stuff like that. This is all pretty well documented, but it's happening. And so our wealth is being diminished. You know that's happening. You know that you cannot just continue to print money after money after money and money that has no value or anything else. So a financial collapse is just on the horizon, and it's a shame. It didn't have to happen. But in verse 9 or verse 8, it says, blow the ram's horn in Gibeah and the trumpet in Ramah. Cry aloud at Beth-Aven. These are all the major cities, worship areas, basically. But look behind you, O Benjamin. We think that Benjamin is Norway in the modern day. This is, I think, the only other tribe that is mentioned in this time. But it only takes a very short time to bring down a nation if, you know, they're assisting in the demise, if the leaders are assisting in the demise. Ephraim shall be desolate in the day of rebuke. Among the tribes of Israel I have made known what is sure. The princes of Judah are like those who remove a landmark. I will pour out my wrath on them like water. Ephraim is oppressed and broken in judgment because he willingly walked by human precept. Therefore I will be to Ephraim like a moth. And I'm pretty sure that the people who are in the church in England can see that, you know, there is the fabric of their society is being eaten away like a moth. It's just being torn away bit by bit by bit. It's a decay that is happening in the very fabric of society. I think there are a lot of people that are woken up in Australia, the United Kingdom, New Zealand. Certainly a lot of our church members are woken up and they see some of these problems happening. I think it's, to be honest with you, I think it's kind of somewhat divided too. People, I think there's a reason that, you know, the prophet said, blow the horn in Zion, blow the trumpet in Zion. I think that we need to wake up as well. So eventually the problem, the decadence, the situation becomes so big that you can't ignore it. So in verse 13, or verse 12, the end of verse 12, to the house of Judah like rottenness, when Ephraim saw his sickness and Judah saw his wound, then Ephraim went to Assyria. Well, I think that this signals, this happened historically, and I'm going to cite this passage for you. 2 Kings, we're not going to turn there, you're going to have to read it on your own. 2 Kings 15, verses 19 through 20. So, it's a historical reference to Israel seeking aid from the land that would invade it like 100 years later. And they did. You know, that's what happened. They were taken away. Maybe not even that in terms of this book. Let's see, what was the dating? Okay, so probably less than 60 years away from Assyria carrying them way into captivity. So that happened historically. So you can kind of look for something like this, the United States of America looking to Europe, looking to a German-centric focused Europe in terms of looking for help to solve its problems. And it's just going to be seen as weakness. I think our nation is basically exposed as a weak nation now. Agree or disagree? I have a number of newsletters that I read. I know Mr. Tannert reads a number of them. And it's amazing the insight of some of these people that are not members of our church. I mean, but they see it very plainly and clearly. So it hasn't really happened yet, but I think that maybe some of the overtures made in the European Union this week of, look, make no doubt about it, the people that are getting together, they are doing what they're doing. They have, in my view, this is personal view, okay, not the Church of God, okay, just so you understand. I believe that they set up this whole Ukrainian invasion. Did they push Putin to do what he did? No. But remember, the Ukraine is a buffer area between the rest of Europe and Russia. It's a known fact that we have biochemical labs in the Ukraine, by the way, in the Ukraine, funded by the United States. You know that, coincidentally, we had bioweapon labs funded in China as well. That is a fact. So in nations in which there are certain remunerative benefits accrued to certain individuals who are leaders, isn't it interesting that both of these areas are posing as centers for world policy now? You can just imagine what could happen. It's not in the interests of our leaders to even have peace in Ukraine. Now, you're thinking, oh, wow, how could they do this? You got people dying, you know, soldiers being killed and everything else. The point is, that's why these prophets spoke out against them. It's because these individuals that are getting bombed in apartment buildings and being killed, these leaders know that this is happening. These people are just pawns to continue this Ponzi scheme of military-industrial complex and scheming for more and more and more control and wealth, and it's all going to backfire. But that's eventually. So I think eventually the problems in our society, as mentioned in the prophets, become so huge that there's no way you can ignore them. The leaders can't ignore them, so they go elsewhere for help. There is a colossus that is about to spring on the earth in the beast, the power of the beast, because we are being launched into a crisis faster than we can imagine. And it's going to be a worldwide crisis that only a conglomeration of nations and a strong power and a strong individual will be able to solve in the crisis. So we can look for that. Moving on to... let's go to, okay, chapter 6, a call to repentance, the beginning of the chapter. Come and let us return to the Lord, for he is torn, but he will heal us. He is stricken, but he will bind us up. After 2 days, he will revive us. This is a different time. This is in the future. This is at Jesus Christ's return. God will have mercy. God will reclaim his people. And in verse 3, they will pursue the knowledge of the Lord. Isaiah chapter 2 and verse 2, Micah chapter 4 and verse 4, basically the same prophecy about all people streaming up to learn of God's way. So remember that the tense, the timing changes sometimes very dramatically between ancient, end time, modern day, all the way into the millennium as well. Ephraim is mentioned again in verse 4. Verse 11, again, Judah is mentioned along with Ephraim as the leading tribe. A harvest is appointed for you when I return the captives of my people, so that it all happen at the same time. Then the tense changes again in verse 7. I really feel that a very strong message needs to come to all of these peoples, these English-speaking peoples, before we can say that, okay, they've had their warning, God's done with them. Verse 3, it says, they make a king glad with their wickedness and princes with their lies. Again, it's an indictment not just on the people, but again, the leaders. Happy that people are listening to them and following their directives. The financial aspect of all of this is something you just can't ignore. It just, when you have a nation that has a wealth of inexpensive fuel and energy, it's hard not to be prosperous. Okay? When you have a cheap and abundant supply of energy, it is hard for a nation not to be plentiful and blessed, because our modern world everything that we have runs on carbon fuels. It's just a fact. But now they've deluded a lot of people and said that that's bad. You know, coal is bad. No, it's not. Coal can burn really, really clean, and basically with the scrubbers they have on coal plants now, the only thing that comes out of the air is water vapor. There's no pollution. Natural gas is the cleanest of all fuels. Many of you have it in your homes, and it heats. It does great. It's inexpensive when it's not, when the production is not limited. We've got like a never-ending supply of oil. When they thought that oil was gone, lo and behold, here we're discovering all these old oil fields thought to be dry. Hey, oil is flowing into them again. In West Texas, in North Dakota, in Colorado, in Pennsylvania, New York. Yeah, New York is so nutty with their environmental restrictions, they won't even tap into the natural gas that they have that's like probably hundreds and hundreds of years supplied. We have friends who are an elder and his wife who live on property in western Pennsylvania, and everybody there has their own gas well, their own natural gas well. They don't have to pay anything for it. It's on their property. They just tap into it. Now, they tap into it, and it's safe. It's amazing. But it's like it's a never-ending supply of natural gas. So we've got, and that's just one example, we've got so much energy in this country, and it's been shut off. The spigot's been shut off. It's been capped. The oil wells have been capped off. And it's like the craziest thing that has ever been done, all in the name of green energy, which is all a hoax, by the way. It's totally a hoax, and you're getting a lot of opinion here, but yeah, I can back it up. I've done a lot of, you've probably done a lot of research on this, but you know, you say, oh, Mr. Buchanan, well, you've got solar panels on your house. I say, yeah, because we've got a lot of sun here, and I don't have a energy bill. But if I'm speaking for everybody, and you can put solar panels on your house too, and you know, it's worked out good for me, but the point is, we don't even need any of that stuff. We've got so much energy in this country, but now it's been shut down. And that is a deliberate attempt based on the hoax of global warming, which is not true. It's not happening. But you've been sold a bill of goods. Everybody has been. And that's the fault of the leaders. Do you really think that all of them, when they fly to all of their fancy resorts and fancy places in Europe, and they're flying in all their fancy jets, and they've got airports going to a ecology conference in Scotland or wherever, and you've got 1,000 private jets, do you think they're really worried about carbon footprint? You know, it's okay for them to have it because they need to be the ones to tell you what to do. And this is what it's boiling down to. So it just, you know, it's just the way it is. Okay, so what we're going to do here is finish up this chapter. And we'll get up to chapter 8, and then we'll have the drawing. We'll have time for questions and that sort of thing. Let's jump down to verse 8. Ephraim has mixed himself among the peoples. This has to do with, you know, they've done the same thing we've done. They've allowed so many different nationalities into their country, and they didn't need to do it. But they have allowed it. They have allowed immigration, both legal and illegal immigration, to where it's not the Anglo-Saxon people only anymore. It's a bunch of foreigners. This is not racial. This is not against foreigners, not against any of the number of different peoples who have come into that nation. A lot of them, I believe they come in for the betterment of the country, just like in this nation. If they come in and they agree to the laws of our nation, they agree to become Americans, then, hey, let them all in. If they have skills and abilities that they can enrich our lives, and if they say, you know, hey, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, then they're Americans, okay? But when you have people that don't assimilate into a culture, that's what it's talking about. It's a mixed group. It's not a homogenous group of people. And we're not talking about race or anything here at all. We're talking about people who refuse to obey the laws of the land and refuse to become British or Australian or New Zealanders or Canadians or Americans. We have a number of people who have done. We know probably many people who have come to this land from many other places on earth, and they love America of whatever race, nationality. But Ephraim has mixed himself among the peoples. Ephraim is a cake unturned. Aliens have devoured his strength, but he does not know it. And that's the present state of the United Kingdom. Verse 10, the pride of Israel testifies to his face, but they do not return to the Lord their God, nor seek him for all of this. With all of the, and I don't think that we've had the beginning of difficult times, but we haven't realized, it just hasn't hit us that hard yet, but it's going to. So take David Elliott's message in World News and Prophecy Review very seriously. You know, maybe stock up a little bit, get some extra supplies, extra food, because there's going to be food scarcity, food inflation. I mean, even our president said that in Europe this week. Hey, we're going to have shortages of food. Nobody's paying attention to him, but, you know, nobody believes him, but he sent a signal to us. There will be shortages of food. And when you take Ukraine, which is the breadbasket of Europe, when you take Ukraine out of production, when you take vast portions of the United States out of production because the cost of fertilizer is so high, I mean, you can just see this looming. These prophecies are coming to pass before our eyes. I hope it, you know, we have to take care of each other, too. We have to ask God to take care of us. But we are coming into some really crippling times if we believe in prophecy. So verse 16 says, they return, but not to the Most High. They're like a treacherous bow. The princes shall fall by the sword. So, you know, the leaders that are bringing all of this, bringing many of these problems upon our land, they'll be, as other prophecies say, the first to go into captivity. Now, I'm not saying captivity's coming next year, the year after that, or whatever, but I just don't think we can rely on things getting better after they've been worse, like we've always relied on them. These areas that they went to, I mean, they went to the false idolatrous centers of religion. And, you know, what does that mean today? Well, trusting in ourselves, trusting in our national institutions, but hopefully you can see that a lot of those things that you used to be able to set a clock to, you used to be able to be guaranteed civil rights, you used to be able to be guaranteed freedom of speech. You can't guarantee that anymore. You just can't. Happy times. So let's stop at 55 minutes.